Tower, DJC. Good morning, Jerry. And Gerald, TR.
Tom? I don't think we got any rain last night. We might have got a little bit. It's kind of cloudy here today. The weather's good up your way, so I'm sure it is, though.
Jerry, I lost you yesterday, and one time I just figured you got a phone call or something. Well, we got 29 hundredths of an inch sometime between about 2 and 4 o'clock this morning, and it's 61 up here right now. They say we're going to get lots of sunshine today, Jerry.
Glad to hear. I turned the power up a little bit. I don't know if that helps any or not. Should be okay, but I haven't been receiving about the last month, I guess. But, yeah, we don't have anything much planned today. I got the hiring guy comes in and does his, he treats it three times a year for us and keeps the fire ants and other insects out of the yard. Yellow jackets, too, for the most part. And that's about all we don't have anything else planned for us anyway.
Yeah, that made a big difference, Jerry, on your signal. Oh, I was just sitting here looking at some photographs that a little old lady from back in Kansas sent me. They're historical. I'll send them to you. You'll enjoy them. And it's a safe link on there. My security network always scans them. And if I don't know who it is, I'd never send it. But Sharon's about, she's in her 80s, isn't she, Bernice? Yeah, she's in her 80s. And a wonderful lady. Yeah, Bernice used to sew for her when we lived up in Kansas. Oh, these are some good, really old pictures that I think you'll enjoy. Well, we went out and blowed leaves around into a pile yesterday and put them in plastic bags. And lo and behold, this morning I think they were reincarnated, Jerry.
11 o'clock, the Tom and Jerry Show.
Call sign. I don't know who that was, Jerry.
Who knows? Yeah, they tend to multiply when you're, I think they do it at night time. I don't know. They must, luckily all our trees that have been cut down next door to us that were throwing all the leaves in my gutters, so hopefully we'll have to clean the gutters out as often anyway, but we don't have any leaves to rake, at least not anything to mount to anything, so we just leave them be.
Well, I'll tell you, we got a big maple tree out in the front yard, and it obliges us. you pick them up one day, and they're back the next year. Well, I went to the doctor's office this morning. I had my doctor's appointment about 8:30 and got there at 8:15, and everything was about the same as it is every 6 months. So just sitting here watching an old Gunsmoke movie right now that I've probably seen 4 or 5 times, but it's pretty good. Just polished off some an egg and link sausage and hash browns and some toast and a couple of cups of coffee. That's about as far uptown as you can get.
On the hog there, Tom, that sounds like a complete breakfast. Not that nutritious for some folks, but that's what I love, having sausage and I'm not much of an egg eater, sausage and grits. And of course, hash brown's always good, too. Anything that's bad for me, I like it.
If it's fried, it's good. I take all of that with grits, and I'm just not from the South. The first time I ever tasted grits was in Heavener, Oklahoma, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and I didn't like them then, and I don't like them now.
Say it's an acquired taste, but it's not. You either like them or you don't like them. I know my wife, when she was little, her grandfather, his family was originally from, he had some family from Pennsylvania originally, I think, but they were all from Georgia, and he used to put sugar in the grits for them, and they call them Yankee grits.
Yeah, I like cream of wheat if you put enough sugar on it. And Bernice always kids me about that. but she likes oatmeal, and I don't like oatmeal unless it's in a cookie.
Oatmeal too in a cookie, but I don't eat it. Lynn, she loves it, and she used to fix it a lot in the morning, but she likes it. And I'm not a cream of wheat person at all. My grandmother loved it, and a lot of other people, you know, in the family like it, but I just don't care for it. It's one of those things, I guess, if you grew up with it, you either develop a taste for it or you starve sometimes, or it's just a family thing, I guess. And of course, it's a lot different from the South in the Midwest. I know one of the guys I worked for years had been he would retire from the Air Force and started a second career, and he was just as iced as he could be. He was out in I thought he was originally from Kansas, but he was actually from Rock Hill, from York County, but he'd lived out there in the Salinas area or somewhere out there for years at one of the Air Force bases. I think he'd done me 25 or 26 years, and he developed some habits over the years, and I'll let this thing drop here a second. Got out time, he said he'd never wear a hat again. He'd never eat fish on Fridays. He'd never wear black shoes. And I don't ever remember him doing any of those things when I worked for him.
It's N0TR. Wow. Yeah, that's a good one, Jerry. Oh, well, I was just scrolling through some of these pictures here, and this is in color, which is really rare for the time. It shows Hitler inspecting the massive 800-millimeter Schwerer Gustav railway gun. Now, I've seen that in old flicks, you know, in black and white. This is in color. It's the largest caliber rifle weapon ever used in combat, and the picture's from 1942, and it's real. I think you'll enjoy that. And as an example, I went to school on an electronic drive up in Pennsylvania, Erie, Pennsylvania, at the GE plant, and there was guys there from the Chrysler Lima tank plant, and I think they had a 120-millimeter gun on that tank, and this one here is 800-millimeter, give you an idea. Holy Toledo. I know it become unusable because they had to move it on rail cars, and that was the only place they could shoot it from, but it would go for miles and miles.
DRN4DJC. Yeah, I've seen pictures of those. I don't think I've seen a photo of one in color. That'd be interesting. I'm not down serious when I get to my iPad or phone, but that'd be interesting. The Germans always had a way. They had all kinds of odd aircraft and weapons they developed, and they were experts at it. They just didn't have the manpower to handle it, I guess. Ran out of fuel eventually, I think. And they put themselves, you know, funny thing is they put themselves in the same positions over there now, with depending on somebody else for the oil and gas, going all green energy, windmills and solar and all that sort of thing. Now they can't. Yeah, this winter they're gonna freeze probably unless they make a deal with somebody. I did read earlier today, I don't know if there's any truth in it or not, that they were some of the places up in the Northeast were restricting the amount of fuel oil people could put in their tanks for already. Which, like I said, it may be one of those fluffed up stories where somebody, they didn't have enough to fill the tank, maybe, who knows. But I find that interesting that we just don't have enough oil. We got plenty of oil and gas, but it's just in the wrong spot, Tom.
In the wrong leadership. Shoot. Yeah, I lost my train of thought there. I was looking at one of these pictures, but the Germans were, and still are, extra fine technicians and great brains. No doubt. I worked on a helium leak detector there at a wheel plant for 4 years, and the Germans developed it, and it could detect a leak in your wheel. We made wheels for General Motors up to when I was there, up to $55,000 a month, and it could detect a leak that would take 7 years for your tire to go down through the porosity of the aluminum. But, oh, they did a job when they built that 98 Mauser, didn't they, Jerry?
EK, that short action they built, that was sweet for the Swedes. Here was that some of the best actions. And they're still guys that built those stuff the last 25 years. They actually, a lot of them, there's several guys that custom makers that are making actions from scratch that are based on the control round feed of the Mauser. That's just a good design. It's hard to beat it. It feeds upside down, sideways, and any other which way too.
That was their AK-47 in years before. It shoot under any condition. But I like the old 383 Springfield real well. It's a really good action, and I have one of those that was sporterized. I had one for a long time, and weighed 9 pounds. That's what we carried in boot camp, and I can tell you, it was 9 pounds.
We got an 03, an original one. And my son looked for one for a long time before he found one that it looked good. It wasn't, $1,200 or whatever. But he's got a pretty nice one, I think. But it's hard to find. It's hard to find originals now in good shape because many of them were sporterized over the years, and they sold them for what, $14-15 through the mail back in the 50s and 60s, before the Gun Control Act, anyway. But yeah, he found a pretty nice one. I thought it was one of the nicest ones I've seen. A friend of mine that collected military bolt actions, and he had one that was a sniper rifle, had the scope, original scope, and the whole 9 yards with it, and it was that thing was just about pristine. He found it. Somebody else had it. So I don't know where he got it. I don't know where they got it. Where they sold it off. DCM gun. I think it was one he got somewhere else, but. Somebody else had owned it before him, and it went to get the Cosmoline off of it. They didn't know how to get off and scraped in a place or two on the stop. But otherwise, I don't think that gun had been fired before he got it. It was just beautiful. And it was it was in the right serial number range, so you didn't have to worry about the receivers.
That sounds excellent. Yeah, you could buy, I think, the actions for like 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks back then. My neighbor rifles out of them. He was a gunsmith, and he could rechamber and the whole 9 yards. He could do it. Blew them. He had hot blue tanks. Boy, that made a beautiful blue. I had a friend the other day that ironically picked up a Model 70 that had been fired just 4 or 5 times, and it's just absolutely, totally mint. You talk about a beautiful rifle. I bet they get a price out of those nowadays, Jerry.
For the old ones, Tom, they do. They like the pre-64s that were all machined. But Winchester, I think they were bought out by FN or one of the French firms or somebody whenever they started machining their own actions again, and did all the machine work on them when the CNC stuff started getting back, getting mainstream. The new actions are pretty diggum good. There's kind of a middle road there between them. I think about after 64 until somewhere around the mid-80s or so, maybe, I guess, late-80s, the actions weren't very good, but the newer ones and the old ones are really, just about as good as you can get. And it's something about the style of that, with that wing safety and being able to do the floor plate and the whole deal. It's just a good action. It always has been. That's reason it's been so popular over the years. And I did see a pre-64, it's been years ago, that a guy had it at one of the shows, and it was in .22 Hornet. That's the only one I'd ever seen in .22 Hornet. But they, and I thought it was a conversion, but somebody told me they did make them in a Hornet, just not very many of them.
Seen that, but I don't believe that's one I've never shot. I've shot some odd ones, 218 beam, stuff like that. You know, I don't even think I shot an 18 B. I've seen them, but I haven't shot it, now that I think of it. But I always kind of wanted a 222 just for the fun of it, but I had a 22 250, and it was a better cartridge, so I was most satisfied, Jerry. But, yeah, the Germans were great. And I think Merle said they had a four groove and a six groove, I think it was, in that Springfield one that Jerry, it's been so long, I can't remember now.
Remember, that sounds reasonable. If they'd, especially during the war production, they'd try to minimize the amount of, those were all fours and, basically just, they weren't cut rifle. They were fours and then finished down. So they put them on just put them on a mandrel. I guess on a mandrel, put them on a mandrel and just in fours and barrel to put the grooves in. I don't think they cut them here in the wartime anyway. Then polished them out, so I guess. That sounds like that's probably reasonable enough. I think that's right. I'm not an expert on Springfield. My son can probably tell you anything you want to know about them, but I never have been that interested in military rifles. That does sound right, though. But yeah, that 218B, they made that Winchester chamber, that in a lever action at one time, too. I think it was a model, it was based on the 92 action, but it was a lever action. They made them, I want to say the model 65, but I may be wrong, but it's 50, I think the 53 was a. Was one of them that had some of the eye cartridges, and I think it went straight stocked, it had a wrist on the stock, curved wrist, and then it was, and I think the 65 might have been the 218B. But it was popular in lever actions in for Winchesters, too.
Yeah, that was the oddest one I could think of. Of course, there were a lot of Wildcats back then, Jerry, but I don't know. I would say this was not a pre-64 on that Winchester, but, oh, God, was that a beautiful rifle. At any rate, somebody just didn't want it anymore. I enjoy seeing the old ones, but at any rate, I haven't even fired a weapon in months. And, I need to go out back and empty a few 22s one of these days. Back's been hurting me terrible the last several days. I've been trying out that thing that daughter bought me. It's called a K-A-I-L-O, Kalo. And it's a bunch of nano capacitors, but it sure wasn't doing the job this morning when I got up. I dread having to go to that band concert tonight. I don't feel like walking in there in them dang aluminum bleachers. She said she'd have us a chair or two, but it's a pretty good walk from the parking lot in there, so. Oh, this old rare disease, HEE, isn't getting to be so rare. Well, it's still gloomy out, and they said it was going to be sunshiny. Boy, my neighbor, she went fishing down at Santee, I think it was. I told you it was Hartwell. But, oh, my, did they knock the channel cat dead down there, Jerry? This is Gerald T.R.
Sure, those are nice ones. That's where my son-in-law goes. They don't go to Santee. Sometimes it's easy to go to Monticello, I think. And I want to say it's over near Union or somewhere like that. I didn't even look on the map. It's not as far as Santee is. But they always have a good time. They catch a lot of catfish usually when they go. And I don't think they keep any of them. I think they put them all back. But they usually catch 8 or 10 apiece in that size range, about 30 pounds. But I don't think I've seen one any bigger than that one I sent you a photo of. But he and Dale worked together for years at Channel 4, and before Dale retired, his fishing buddy, about a year or so before he retired, it happened and went in the water and he drowned, so he lost his best fishing buddy. So my son-in-law Bob goes with him. They just do at least twice a year, sometimes three times a year when they get going that way. They both love to fish. My son-in-law hates fishing a mud puddle if he thought there's something in it.
They are leaving a little space there if somebody needs the repeater. Yeah, that was, I forgot about that picture you sent me. Wow, that was amazing. And you sure got a lot to be proud of with those kids, Jerry. They've done a magnificent job in life, I'll tell you. And that was just a whopper of a picture. Man, I never caught a channel that big in my life. About 10 pounds, about it for me. The grandnephew, he caught a 18-pounder out of the pond up home one time out of my brother-in-law's pond. And he actually had a... I guess if you take a picture of a fish nowadays, they don't even need to fish. They just make you one. And he's got that in his room back up in Boston. I never heard anybody mounting a channel cat, but he did. It weighed 18 pounds. But boy, Tim, my neighbor, guys, I talked to his wife last night, and she said they'd just been knocking them dead.
TR and 4DJC. Yeah, I think they just use fiberglass replicas now. They take a picture, get the weight and the girth and the length. That's about all they know, but all they need. But that's still expensive, though. But for a trophy fish, it's worth it. You know, they don't have to go through trouble skinning it and all that stuff, and you don't have to worry about the spoiling. And then you might catch it again sometimes when it's 10 pounds larger. You never know. I usually caught and release most of mine. I keep my trout sometimes, if maybe a couple of trout for us to eat for dinner or something like that, but otherwise, I always release mine. Well, the guy's out there working on the lawn now. I'm going to go down there and check on him, see what he's doing. I think he's got this, it just looks like a mower-looking thing, and it goes in and it sprays, for the fire ants and kills other insects, too. And he puts a little detergent in it, and that detergent marks where he's been so he didn't go to the same spot twice and so he didn't miss anything. So it's a pretty cool apparatus, but I think he told me that thing was about $20,000 or $25,000 or something like that. Anyway, I'm going to go downstairs to see what he's up to and go ahead and get the check ready for him. Well, we'll talk to you a little bit later, Tom. 732, you and Bernice have a good afternoon. Hopefully we'll catch you a little bit later on today. In 0TRM4DJC.
Okay, Jerry. Really enjoyed it, as usual. Be sure to look at those pictures I sent you. It's a link. But, wow, there's some good ones on there, especially for us old-timers. Take care, Jerry. Have a good day. In 4DJC and 0TR, clear.